Ready to start. We welcome you to school board meeting tonight. We're happy to be at Cleveland Elementary, and we have we need to excuse Marie Johnson. She's out of town, and all other board members are here, and Superintendent Citrud and Jared Black. So we will begin by standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is this too loud? Is that fan too loud?
I think
only
we're okay.
If you can't hear us.
Okay.
I think we're a small enough group. Everybody can hear okay? Okay. We have the consent agenda, the warrants, the minutes for September 2015 meeting, and the financial reports for September. Are there any questions that haven't been answered?
I haven't, and I would make a motion that we accept them as we receive them.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Personnel actions, names for approval.
Okay, we have... I sent you five names, but there's been a few added since then. Would recommend the board approval of these new hires. Jody Olson as a special education resource teacher here at Cleveland Elementary School. Danny Tuttle, Dana Guyman, and Desiree Aldridge as educational assistants at Huntington Elementary. This is in special ed. 3 hours each a day. Jill Weber as the student tracker at Standard Fell Junior High School. That's a 3-hour position, which is paid for out of their land trust funds, as part of their land trust plan. And also, we had our girls basketball coach decide not to return this year, and Mr. Davis is recommending Lynn Tuttle as the girls' head basketball coach, with Ty Jensen and Rachel Hallows as assistants. And I, upon recommendation from the principals of those schools, I recommend to you that they be approved.
Okay.
I move that we approve these names.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? We have the approval of annual school plans, the school improvement plans, staff development plans, and elementary reading plans.
This was this is the annual. The schools are required to do these annually. They most of them don't change a lot from year to year. They're updated, and they will make some additions based on test scores. Their school community council ideas and suggestions. But at most schools, that funding goes from year to year to fund programs that they have going. So you don't always see a lot of major changes, but there are some changes in the plans. But it's required for them to be approved in October, and then they are, once they're approved, they will be posted on the website for review. But again, these are plans that are developed. There's a school improvement plan for all schools. There's a staff development plan for all schools, and the elementary schools have a reading plan that they submit. And then, after board approval, they're posted on the website. I would recommend that the board approve the school plans that have been sent to you. A lot of reading.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Do you have a motion to do that?
Do you have any questions about it?
No, some of the stuff I really liked, though.
There's a lot of good stuff.
There are some
on.
That are really detailed and some that are not. It was very helpful, the detailed ones. I appreciate that. That's
I make it helps that us. We approve the school plans.
Well, and one of the, before you have finished that, one of the reasons that some of them are so short is probably partially my fault, because they were going in so many different directions that I made a template. Because there were certain things that really needed, were required to be in the plans that were missing, and I wanted it to be streamlined a little bit, because there was so much reading to do. And And so some of them kind of stuck right with the template and others expanded on it, and it's starting to grow more and more, which is okay. But we did at one time, I discussed with the board about 3 or 4 years ago, streamlining those plans and making them a little bit common as far as the structure and what's included in them, so they weren't so hard
that
to read.
Some of them, the outline was the same from school to school.
Yep. But basically, everybody's working on the same thing.
Yeah.
Math, science, language arts.
That's right. The big ones.
Right?
Yeah. We have a motion from Julie.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Approval of high school athletic schedules.
Okay, last month I sent you those schedules, and I do have still have one copy if somebody wants to look at it.
I think
we
still have them.
But we were too late to have it on the agenda for approval, but it's our two high school, the athletic schedules that they have up to this point, some of them are still in process, but the law requires the board approve any travel over 150 miles one way, but rather than just single them out, we just bring the whole sports schedule to you and have you approve it. It's not...
Say that again.
Okay.
150 miles.
The law requires the board approve any travel for sports competition that's more than 150 miles away one way. So if you're, for example, from here to Vernal to play Uinta High School is a little bit over 150 miles one way, so you would have to approve that.
Gotcha.
Rather than have just pulling those out of every schedule, we just bring the sports schedule. That way you can see whether it changes from year to year or not, and then you just approve the whole schedule, which would take in that travel. So we just bring the whole schedule to you. These are
the
sports schedules
that
have been developed so far for Green River High and Emory High. So, and I've looked at them, and they're not atypical. They're typical schedules that we've had in the past. And I can't remember one of the sports. I think it was even one or two games less than in the past. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I'd recommend that you approve the sports schedule.
I would make a motion that we approve the sports schedule that you've given it to us.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? We have KOAL Apples for Teachers Award Program approval.
Yeah.
Why do we have to approve that?
We typically don't, but one of the reasons is because when they called, they said we would really like to have board approval, because we feel that show of support is important to this program.
Yeah.
We typically, a teacher award program, we would typically give approval to it, but they specifically requested that it be presented to the board and approved by the board. So it may be part of, actually it's KASL, and it's probably KOAL too, they're both the same station, KUSA.
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 So what about, how did they get the nominations from the students? Did they just ask for it on the radio, or did they go to the school?
I think they provide nomination forms to the school,
okay.
And then I think they can do it online too.
Students, faculty, and others are invited to nominate.
Yeah.
Most of them come from the students.
I just wondered how
they
got it out
there.
Sometimes they do it online.
Oh, here it says.
They
can nominate an educator by sending a short explanation on why the educator of their choice deserves the monthly award.
I just didn't know how they got that information out. If they gave it to them as a...
Oh, I understand.
Yeah, as a...
they
if they go around the classes and hand
yeah.
them out.
They do provide
you
information,
know.
But then the nominations can be emailed.
That's a little disruptive.
To the radio station.
Yeah.
So
that seems a lot more...
They will choose one. It's been in Carbon County for some time, and it seems like we did it here for a year or two.
We have.
At
yeah.
some point.
I think
and
so
then
too.
They
yeah, it says that they'll come to the
yeah.
school board meeting.
Make it.
Said,
well, they
yeah.
said they
That's
would be willing to come
the
if we wanted to. I told them that I felt like I could just present it to you. So.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
But they will choose an educator of the year from Carbon County and one from Emory County, and they receive an iPad, an Apple iPad. Mm.
Teachers can't get enough recognition, that's for sure.
The student that nominates them will get an iPod, so.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Yeah.
But it is a good program, and like I say, I think we have done it before.
Mm-hmm.
We also had the
Ms. J is one of us.
Like a Golden Apple Award at Emory from Emory Telecom the one time that we did, but anyway, they wanted to have board approval, so I brought it to the board to approve it, and we'll get back with them. So.
Well, I make a motion that we approve it.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? We have Principal Lockley's report now, and I just need to, I was really impressed with your plan that you did the summer so that they're caught up during the summer and they don't lose a lot of stuff. That was really impressive to me. I think that's just really a great program. Maybe you can tell us about it.
Before he starts, would you wish him a happy birthday?
Oh, happy birthday. We should have brought cake or something.
Yeah, that's okay. I have my share today.
He brought the treats.
Okay.
Yeah. Just welcome to Cleveland Elementary. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But, you know, just, and you're aware of the situation with the passing of, and the tragic accident of Heather and her son Brock. That's been a challenge for our school at the beginning of the year, not only for students, but the teachers especially, because we're kind of a family. So we're going to miss both of them. In fact, we do miss both of them.
How is her husband doing?
He's home. Last report that I have is he's doing okay. Children are glad to have him home. We have one of his daughters that's still here with us that are at our school. Baby, so. And she seems to be adjusting really well. She's doing okay. But yeah, we do have a summer school program, and so we use our trust land funds to help pay for that. And so what we usually do is we have teacher recommendations, we look at test scores, and use both sets of data and decide which students would benefit most, and then we send out a letter and invite through the parents those students to participate. And we usually have enough students so that we have three teachers that come during the summertime. And we spend Tuesday and Thursday for 3 hours. And so what happens is we invite one student to come for an hour each of those days. So they get 2 hours. And we review some of the skills that we feel that they need to review and try to keep them up. And also, hopefully, help those that are having difficulty improve on their skills. So that's been successful, I think, when we've done that. And we do a summer packet program also, where students are given a summer packet to take home at the end of our school year, and then they're asked to bring it back at the beginning of the next school year, and those who bring it back, we do a summer packet reward activity, and the last few years we've been taking our students bowling, so those who complete 80% of the packet get to come join us in that activity, and so that's been good for them. That helps keep them up as well.
Yeah.
So. Those two programs have been successful for us. And as was mentioned tonight, Jody Olson has been hired to be our new special education resource teacher. I think she'll be a really good fit for our school. A similar personality to Heather will make it easier for our students who have been in the program to adapt. And she's been working hard the last almost 2 weeks now, looking at the IEPs and getting acquainted with the students, working with her aides, and so she's ready to begin working more with students as of next Monday. So I think she'll do a good job, I really do.
Great.
Just some quick information. We at Cleveland like to do programs. There's more to education than just books, and so we have basically three programs during the year. We have half of the school prepare program for Christmas time. The other half of the school prepare a program usually in February or March. We've scheduled those this year. Christmas one's going to be on Thursday, December 17th. And our one in the spring is going to be Thursday, March 10th. And we always have one at 9 in the morning and then one at 7 in the evening. So that we can get as many parents as possible to participate. We often have to set up lots of chairs because the bleachers won't hold everyone, but they're really supportive. And we have a Veterans Day program, just a short program. This year we're going to hold it the day before Veterans Day on Tuesday, November 10th. And We have students that are involved in doing that, and we invite all the veterans from Cleveland and Helm to come and participate.
Right.
That's been a good thing too, so. That time yet hasn't been determined, but we're gonna do it on the November 10th. Just, you know, that we've adopted in the district a new math program, the Houghton Mifflin Go Math, and so the teachers are working hard to implement that. And this year, the school community council decided we need to emphasize science a little more, so we're focusing a little more on the science area. Hopefully we'll make some improvements there. And we're going to continue on the four R words that we've introduced a couple of years ago. You probably noticed them as you came in the door: the rights, responsibility, respect, and recognition. And so hopefully the students know that they have rights and other students have rights, and they're responsible for doing, respecting the rights of other people. And then we try to recognize them each week for the previous week by giving them a certificate for a pizza that a business has volunteered to give us, and then a pencil, and take their picture and put it in the paper. So that's been good for them. That's how we recognize them. And there's a couple of areas we want to add to that this year. We're focusing on two other words, and that's just kindness and friendship, because those things add to what we're doing. So that gives you an overview of what we're doing. There are a lot of other things, but a brief explanation of what we're trying to do at Clayton Elementary.
Thank you for that, and for all that you do for our students, and pass that on our thanks to your staff, if you will. We appreciate all that they do. We know that they really care. You can see that in this school there's a lot of teachers that care about their students. We know that. Thank you. Business administrator's report.
Just a couple of things. You should have had in your packets a copy of our annual financial report and program report. I know it's the highlight of your reading. And anyway, we have, just for your information, those are published on our school district website as well, and they're sent to the state auditor's office, and they're published on the state auditor's website, and they're sent to the state office of education. So we distribute those reports, and then we're still working, and maybe for Julie's benefit a little bit here, we also publish a comprehensive annual financial report. It's about 120 pages. And it has.
So what's the difference between that and this?
That's basically a budget that shows what we spent. And the financial report has explanations of our financial practices and policies, and how things turned out for the year, and all of our financial statements as well. So we'll have that probably by next board meeting, with the report from our auditors as well, the comprehensive report. And then, just briefly as well, October 1st is the day that we officially count our student enrollment. And so John and I go around with our auditor and we sample different classrooms. Cleveland Elementary was actually one of the schools we did this year. And so we go into the classroom, the teacher reads the roll, the auditor verifies that the kids are actually there, and anyway, things went well with that portion of the audit this year. John is still holding on to the number. He won't release it yet until it's official. But I think it's around 2230. So that's what I have to report.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Superintendent Citry.
Let me just report on a couple of visits. And I sent you information on the one we had on September 16th, three busloads of Utah legislators and their spouses show up at Green River High School. We had the auditorium was almost clear full of legislators and spouses, but we had most of the leadership of the legislature. We had Howard Stevenson and Senator Osmond and Bob Hillier and some of the finance gurus of the legislature there, which was good, because that's where most of our focus was on Associated Press, traveled on the buses with them. They started out in Salt Lake, and then I think from about Spanish Fork down, and they had Carbon County Commissioners on the buses with them speaking. From Price to Green River, they had Emory County Commissioners on the bus speaking. And they met us at Green River High School and actually gave us an hour and a half, but they were almost a half hour late when they got there. But we had an hour, and they were pushing us at the end to dismiss because they wanted to get to Dead Horse Point. But we did keep them a few minutes late. But we spent a little over an hour with them. It was a four-county tour. They left there and went, I think, up through Castledale and over Huntington, and then Huntington over Huntington Canyon. Look at the burn scar up there and the catch basins that they've created. And then they stayed in Fairview. They stayed in Moab, by the way. And then they went on up through and stayed in Fairview and before they headed back to the Wasatch Front. We also, we had a PowerPoint presentation. Laurel was there, was able to see what we presented to them.
Can I just interject here for just 1 second? You would have been very proud. Principal Johnson gave a presentation, and Superintendent Citru did an excellent job of presenting our the uniqueness of our rural schools, and Neil Peacock as well. And I have gotten reports back from Wes Curtis, who was kind of the facilitator of it, how impressed they had talked about it as they for the rest of the tour. It seems like that was very impactful to them. So we appreciate what they did. It was very well prepared and very well presented. So thank you.
And Jared had a big spill ready.
Yeah,
and
Jared
got
ousted
because of time. So he felt really, really bad that he didn't get to say more. He actually,
bummer.
He actually put the PowerPoint
he looked kind of mad.
As Laurel indicated, Wes Curtis was really the facilitator of this whole tour. And we did get an email from him, and I think I sent copies to each of you to read, and it was very complimentary. He said both in Moab and in Fairview at the evening meals, the leadership of the House and Senate, that's all they could talk about, was the visit to Green River High School and the education that they got on what it is like in a small rural school. We did some comparisons with Green River High and Lone Peak High. 228 different course offerings at Lone Peak compared to 25 at Green River. The clubs, Lone Peak, like nearly 70 different clubs compared to two or three or four at Green River High. But we also emphasized the financial issues related to small schools and how important the Necessary Existence Small Schools Fund is. But we also emphasize the point, the benefits of attending small rural schools. And I think the fact that there isn't any of us that would trade our rural education for an education anywhere else in the state of Utah. That there are some unique opportunities for teachers, particularly to get to know students and their needs, and they know their families, and they know their background, and where they come from, and what their hopes and desires are. And so, for the most part, our teachers have a real opportunity to mold dreams and to be a real part of the students' lives that they don't get on in some of those schools that are 2,000 or 3,000. The opportunities to participate. And so we felt good about the visit that they had there, and they were very impressed. And also, Neil Peacock was there representing rural educators. He's the president of the association, and did an outstanding job of presenting some of the real benefits of teaching in a small school, even Emory High being considered a small school in most respects. But also, Senator Osmond invited Neil to speak on his weekly radio show. And so Neil did have about 12, 15, stretched it to 15, but had 12 minutes, but he took a little extra time. But the interesting thing was that Senator Osmond also had Senator Stevenson there. And so I haven't listened to the tape of it. I've talked to Mr. Peacock about what went on, but it's not, the tape of that, the airing of that show is not online yet, so we're excited to, or curious to see how that went, but.
Pass it along, yeah.
Pass it along.
I'd like to see that one.
I'm trying to remember the name of his radio show, but if you type in Aaron Osmond Radio, Weekly Radio Show or something, you might, it may come up, and I know he posts them, but the last one he had posted was in June.
Okay.
So I'm not sure it's even there yet, but.
Is there a podcast of it?
No, I think it's just an audio recording.
Oh.
It's a radio show, and I think it's an audio recording, and that's it.
I think Neil could get special access to it or something.
But we're watching for it, so hopefully we'll be able to re-record it or pass it on to you somehow so that you can listen to that. But I thought it was very impressive. He was that impressed to invite someone to speak on his radio show about small schools. So anyway, we also, there were four of us that took a trip to Uinta and Duchesne school districts last Wednesday. We spent the entire day in those two school districts. We were looking at their transition of moving ninth grade to high school and sixth grades to middle schools. It was very informative. I've written a few comments there on your agenda. We learned a lot. We learned of some of the challenges that they have, but also as they see it, some of the benefits, recognizing all of the school districts that we've been able to contact or talk to that have done this in recent years have done it because of overcrowding. So it's a little unique, the situations. But we were most interested in finding out what some of the challenges were with regard to teacher licensure and endorsements and staffing issues. And we did pick up a lot of information about that, including copies of schedules and particularly with sixth grade. I honestly feel that our biggest challenge, if we move that direction, will be with the transition of sixth graders. And that was probably their biggest challenge. Our next step is to, we're hoping sometime during October or early November to be able to do a short survey. It will be probably an online survey using SurveyMonkey, getting the word out of our community members and parents concerning opinions and desires with regard to that kind of a move, should we decide to do it. Again, our biggest challenge will be in the staffing of the 7th, 8th grade area, because the numbers are so low. 6th grade generally is kept self-contained pretty much in the middle schools, everyone we've seen. Particularly for the core subjects. The teachers teach different groups of kids, but they all stay together as sixth graders. Or they transition as in like band, those kind of programs. Well, even band is self-contained in sixth grade for the most part. But they do some interaction, but for the most part, biggest concerns the parents had about sixth grade was intermingling with the seventh and eighth graders. And so in both of their cases, they actually cordoned off a wing of new schools that they had built, and they've pretty much kept the sixth graders isolated, but they're beginning now to transition them after 3 or 4 years and integrated into one system. But with small numbers, if you look at a seventh and eighth grade, the challenge is going to be staffing that with teachers in the right endorsed areas and having full-time teachers in that school because of the numbers. Right now, we're having a struggle because we share teachers between the two junior highs and Emory High and the junior highs. This will probably magnify that somewhat, but we won't know until we really get into that part. Right now, we have the secondary principals and the counselors working on running mock scheduling to see what kinds of staffing we would need and what kind of courses, where we have the endorsements, and what it would do staffing-wise, and we'll see what data we can collect from that, along with our survey of the communities and parents.
I have a question. With us, with sixth graders, we'd have to bus them.
Yes.
Did that happen there? Because that's kind of unique to our situation, maybe. I don't know. That's
busing is not as big a thing there because they're all, it's either all Roosevelt or all Vernal.
Okay.
They did not, the schools in Duchesne itself were not impacted, nor will the schools in Green River in our district be impacted.
Mm-hmm.
But we have all of these separate communities that are approximately 10 miles apart,
mm-hmm.
and they're all within one city.
Yeah, I wondered, because that,
so
that is a consideration.
Their busing didn't really change a lot.
Well, where do the kids from Mighton go then?
Kids from Mighton, I think they talked about, they're actually, Mighton has an elementary school.
Yeah, they do. But they'd have to bus the
but
kids
they,
over.
But they do bus their...
They do bus their sixth grade.
To Roosevelt. That's about 7 or 8 miles, I think.
But they were already busing 7th and 8th and
yeah.
high school kids
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, high school kids anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
I was surprised that Mighton actually had an elementary school, but they do.
Yep, they do.
There's like 80 or 90 kids, maybe, where I can't remember the route. But they do have an elementary school there in Mighton. I was a little surprised by that, but again, I don't think a transition for 9th graders would be difficult. Staffing wise, it will pull teachers out of our junior high schools because of endorsements. The real problem, and I don't know that staffing with the 6th grade will be a huge issue. The philosophical move might be, philosophically.
Yeah.
But I think staffing is going to be the huge, huge issue as far as having the teachers endorsed in the right subject areas at the 7th, 8th grade. I mean, you can always do a configuration where you have K-6 and 9-12 and then a 7-8 middle school, but that puts about 170 at San Rafael and about 140-some at Canyonview, which is small, but I mean, if you move the 6th grade, you're going to have Cottonwood with about 130-some and another school with 170 in elementary, K-5, but... Those are preliminary things that we're discovering, but again, staffing will be the huge issue there. But hopefully we'll have some survey information. We'd like to get that for our November meeting. We're trying to get set up with the software for the SurveyMonkey to be able to do it. We need to track surveys so that people aren't sending in multiple surveys. That it's either one per family or one per student.
There's probably a lot of parents who won't have access to the internet to take the survey. So what do you do there?
Well, we'll have to work that out. We'll have to have hard copies available at the school. But again, it's tracking. We know that there are some who are more passionate than others, but we don't want anyone filling out 20 surveys.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to be able to track those surveys somehow. Number them, something. Keep track of
he's
them.
Got a hand over here, Kurt.
I'm trying to quit choking here.
Could
they
that
are.
Survey be presented in a parent-teacher conference to where the lab made available to where they could take that survey to eliminate the ones that don't have the internet access?
That's kind of been suggested. The problem we have is that our turnout to our secondary parent-teacher conferences is not real high. Elementary would be. But our secondary is very low. Our percentage of attendance is very low. But elementary, that's possible to do that in a lab setting as they come in for appointments or conference. We're still not sure whether we probably will survey all parents, not just sixth grade enough, because those other kids will eventually hit sixth grade. So with elementary, that would work really well, but secondary it wouldn't. So if you have any suggestions on a good way to survey and have it accurately portrayed what the tone of the community is on this, beyond sports, let us know. We really need some feedback on that.
I think honestly with the sixth grade is strictly social concerns. Not so much academic.
Both of the other districts, Alon and Carbon, the biggest concerns parents had were more social than they were academic. However, there are some who want their sixth graders playing sports at the middle school level.
more competitive. However, I must say that both Duchesne and Uinta, neither one allow their sixth graders to play sports in the middle school.
So for them, was it a, after it's all said and done, what, has it been a good thing for them?
Well, it has been because they had to make the move or build new schools because of the overcrowding. So they took a positive spin on it right to begin with because they had to do it. Uinta still had to build two new middle schools, but they were looking at more than that. Duchesne, it was more an elementary issue, and they still will probably have to build an elementary or two, but they were looking at much more than that.
And Carbon was as well.
And
that
Carbon
was
looking having to build new elementary schools, so they removed the pressure by moving the sixth grade.
So did they have any parents biting them, or did everybody get on board and it was a good thing?
Ninth grade, they had very little resistance. They had one or two who were concerned about their seventh grade daughters and the 12th grade boys.
Ninth grade daughters and 12th grade boys.
But they found out quickly that that was an early issue, but it didn't pan out. But they also pointed out that having all of their schools, most of their schools within those two cities, those kids interact anyway, and they sometimes have to chase 12th graders off from their middle school campuses that come to pick up the girls. So, anyway.
They'll find a way to get together.
Raise them in a bubble.
But you're right. It is, for sixth grade, it's more social concerns than it was academics. And that's, But they were in a situation where it was either spend a lot of money, do bonding, build those schools, or move the kids. And again, Duchesne particularly, they're in their second or third year of it, and they basically isolated the sixth grade. They had an agreement with parents that they would keep them isolated from the seventh and eighth until the parents were more comfortable with it. I don't know if our buildings are conducive to that up there. We don't have, our classrooms are all in kind of a U shape. But again, we're not that far along yet to know. But there's, in both cases and at Carbon, the sixth grade is pretty much self-contained in their own. They have their core of teachers that work with them, except for some isolated subjects where they have to integrate. But they're planning even now. I think Carbon was more self-contained in the morning time, and then in the afternoon they crossed over grade levels a little bit. Uinta and Duchesne are pretty much isolated for the whole day, but Duchesne superintendents indicate that next year they would probably start more integration in some of the non-core areas like CTE classes, keyboarding, that was
they do in band. The sixth graders go with the seventh and eighth graders for band.
I think they have an initial month or two where they work the sixth graders until they learn to play instruments, and then they push them together. Now, Uinta's on a trimester system. It's a little different than what we use. We're on a semester system. They have, instead of well, we actually have four terms, but two semesters. They have three trimesters. Mm-hmm. And so their courses are all geared toward those trimesters. And so they'll be on a different schedule each trimester. They kind of switch classes a little bit. The as I recall, Duchesne is on, with their middle school, with their sixth grader, is on a 10-period, it's a 5-period rotating block schedule. They'll have a 70-minute periods on Monday, well, every day, but they'll take five courses for 70 minutes each on Monday, and then Tuesday they take five different courses for
except
70
math,
minutes.
Math, science, and language arts are taught each day.
They have those three every day.
And then, those are taught every day, but they have the block scheduling. So they do really 10 periods during the school year, for those kids. But they're longer periods of time.
70 minutes in one class.
That's a long time.
It depends on the class. The math teacher said it was probably too long.
I would think.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the CTE or
the
science or
yeah.
And even language arts, it was a little bit long. But some of the more hands-on classes, they said
okay.
It was really a good thing.
70 minutes.
Keyboarding.
If you go with that Go Math, then actually that 70 minutes is actually beneficial because that Go Math lesson extends 45 minutes, so you can actually fit that whole thing in.
Yeah.
In answer to your, I can't remember who asked the question, was it a positive? The teacher, we met with teachers at in Duchesne.
There are two teachers that both had just finished their administrative licenses. They made sure we met their most positive teachers. So,
but
they had a core of 8 or 10. I think they started when they moved. First moved, it was 8 teachers. Now they have 10.
Yeah, they moved
just for 6th grade.
What they did was move all of their 6th grade teachers when they made the move.
They didn't give them a choice. They met with them as a group, they talked it out, and they moved them. Uinta School District called all of their, each principal interviewed every elementary teacher and looked at their CACTUS, their record on the state office site, what endorsements they have. They looked at their teaching background, they looked at everything, and then they interviewed the teachers. And then they looked for those that they felt would fit the middle school the best, and they made that move with them.
Hmm.
But Duchesne didn't. They just moved all of their 6th grade teachers to the middle school. And as long as they're self-contained, the elementary license is valid. If it's they're self-contained there, and they did not need the subject area endorsements unless they were teaching in 7th or 8th grade. But they did find it, try to determine which teachers had the, who was probably better at math and who was better at science. And
okay.
They tried to fit them in that way, and then they provided professional development and opportunities to get additional coursework in those content areas.
If it's a direction we happen to go, then what, and some teachers don't have the endorsements they need, what would we do just to allow them to an opportunity to get that endorsement over time, like we have other teachers?
Those in 7th and 8th grade, we would have to require them in some way to go back and get the endorsement. The board would probably have to authorize the money to pay for them to do it.
Okay.
We would have to pay the cost of the coursework and the getting the endorsements.
Hmm.
And that'll be the bigger challenge is the fact that you don't have a large enough student body to house, you know, right now we might have a full-time and a half-day science teacher in each, or a half full-time and a half-day math. You may only be able to have a 5-period math teacher in one school and a 5 in another, and there's going to be maybe a lot of traveling.
Yeah, that's the.
And in that case, we do pay prep periods for them to travel, which is a cost of about $9,000 for a prep period to pay them to travel during that prep period. So that's going to be our biggest challenge is in the 7th, 8th grade area. Anyway, that's where we're at. That's the information we have right now on it, and we'll keep you posted. Just a reminder that the fall USBA regional meeting is October 20th in Price at the school district office at 6. We'll probably need a count sometime before then as how many will come. I've also listed some information. I'll just let you read it about my visit with the principals on board member visits.
Yeah,
the schools.
You read that.
So I'll just let you read through that, and if you have questions, shoot me an email or something, but that was our discussion here. I know I had another thought. Oh, it had to do with our visit out there. The interesting, oh, here, the interesting thing that we found, and we've got to verify with the state office, and we don't know if we dare make the call. Uinta's under the assumption that you have to have the subject area endorsements to teach sixth grade in a middle school. Duchesne says you don't.
Mm.
And I think the state and Carbon has ignored it. And so I think it's a matter of nobody's talking to the state office and nobody wants to talk to them for fear that they're doing it wrong. So. There's some.
You're going to tattletale on all three.
No, no, no. There's some confusion as to whether in a middle school setting, the sixth grade teachers, if they don't teach the same group of kids all day like in the elementary, if they rotate them and a different teacher teaches different subjects, whether or not they have to get the endorsement. And so when I said they don't have to, that's Duchesne's side of it. They're pretty adamant about it. Uinta says, no, it was opposite. No, it was that way. Uinta says we do have to have the endorsement.
Hmm.
So we'll find out. That's the cliffhanger.
Book clip.
That's all.
They did it a book
Thank
clip.
You. Thanks for that report and
Second
for taking the time to
four subjects,
look
just
into
one
that. Any wow. public comments? Okay, if not, we have some items, negotiation items, and property items to discuss in closed meeting.
I move that we go into the closed session for those items.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Thank you for coming.